The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov, a real fascinating story that you guys have been following there, really.
Yeah.
It's something that's quite unbelievable.
It's unbelievably sad as well. There's the part of it that, of course, we celebrate, which is that, that a couple has found the baby, managed to save her. The hospital, the nurses have been incredible. The care and the love that she's being shown is incredible. But of course, the tragedy in all of this is somewhere there's a mother that felt so desperate that she abandoned her child. And that, to me, is just absolutely tragic.
Agreed, absolutely agreed.
Prime Minister Netanyahu met yesterday with the President of Sudan during his trip to Uganda. What brought about this meeting?
Well, this is all a move about trying to normalize relations between Israel and Sudan. We know that Prime Minister Netanyahu has been on a quest in Africa to try to bring the normalization of ties between Israel and African countries. And of course, he feels that Israel does have quite a lot to offer Israeli countries in return for their support. Why Sudan? Sudan is a very, very fascinating story, because for those people who can remember back to the period just after the 1967 war, Sudan, Khartoum, the capital of Sudan, was where the Arab League summit convened in order to discuss the aftermath of the Six-Day War. And the Khartoum Declaration had as its kind of headlines three no's: no peace with Israel, no recognition of Israel, no negotiations with Israel. Those were the three no's that came out of Sudan in September 1967. And yet now, all those years later, it seems to be yes, yes, and yes. The president of Sudan met with Prime Minister Netanyahu in Uganda yesterday. And it seems as if the two countries are now working towards normalizing diplomatic relations with each other. There was a two-hour meeting that took place in Entebbe. Of course, Ugandan President Museveni was broker. He invited the two leaders, and it seems as if there's going to be almost immediate cooperation between the two countries, or developing cooperation, because on the one hand, you know, this comes as a little bit of a surprise. People were not aware of the fact. On the other hand, behind the scenes, there's been a real warming of relations between Israel and Sudan over the years. And so for those cynics amongst us, they would say, well, this is just another photo opportunity for Prime Minister Netanyahu ahead of the election. And it really doesn't represent anything significantly different from what has already been going on up until now. I think both views probably have some justification. It was interesting that the Palestinian Authority is very, very upset about this new development. Saeb Erekat was quoted as saying that this is like a stab, like a knife in the back of the Palestinian people, because he can sense that Israel is somehow succeeding to drive a wedge between Arab countries, Sudan, of course, being regarded as linked to the Arab world, of course, member of the Arab League. And so the Arabs, or particularly the Palestinians, would really like to have some sort of unity within the Arab League supporting the Palestinian cause. And to the extent that Israel is succeeding slowly but surely to develop diplomatic relationships with Arab countries, the Palestinians really see that as weakening their links with the rest of the Arab world against Israel. And so this is a significant moment. And it also gave rise to another news story, which is sort of a related news story, which has suggested that the Israeli government and Netanyahu in particular have been working very hard to try to normalize relations with Morocco. And that relationship with Morocco has involved apparently the United States, as the Israelis proposed something of a tripartite agreement whereby the United States would recognize areas of the Western Sahara as part of the sovereign land of Morocco, in return for which the Moroccans would enter into diplomatic relations with Israel. And of course, Netanyahu would go off to be photographed with the king of Morocco. That hasn't transpired. And it seems as if actually the Moroccans have been digging their heels in rather than the Americans. But that's also an interesting story that just goes to show these developing relations, which could never have been thought of on that day in Khartoum in 1967 when the Arab League pronounced three no's.
Absolutely incredible. We really are seeing, we can't ignore the fact that it's election season once again. But either way, Netanyahu doing some amazing international work.
He is absolutely doing some amazing international work. And as we've said before, I mean, particularly for African countries, it seems that Israel has a great deal to offer. There's been talk about some military cooperation with the Sudanese. Let's not forget that there are quite a large number of Sudanese refugees who have actually made their way to Israel, people who here, who've been incorporated into Israeli society, working here, albeit under quite difficult conditions. But I mean, that's another link between the two countries. And of course, the whole agricultural sphere. Israel is really, really well developed in agriculture. A lot of high-tech work that's gone into developing, to improving agricultural methods. And I think that that's where much of the focus has been in terms of bringing support to African countries, in return for which, of course, Israel is hoping that when international organizations like the United Nations and other such organizations meet and there is a vote at the General Assembly, countries like Sudan, countries like Uganda, other African countries will stand up and make their vote count, because there's so many anti-Israel resolutions that are being passed around these organizations. And of course, the agenda behind the scenes is that hopefully some of the support will come in favor of Israel rather than against it, or through abstentions. And slowly but surely, Israel can somehow work its way through this huge amount of anti-Israel sentiment that we see in these international organizations.
Amazing. The incendiary balloons have detonated along the Gaza border. What's the latest development here?
Well, the latest development is that we're seeing a real uptick in the use of incendiary balloons. And during that summer period, when so many of these balloons were being sent over the border and the conditions were dry and they had this sort of flame hanging down as the balloon floated across the border, and all it needed to do was to kind of knock into the branches of a tree and it could set a whole field alight. So we were waiting for the winter months to come, and indeed they came, and the winter months have brought a lot of rain. So the fire balloons that we've seen previously obviously were not effective, with the conditions being much wetter than they were before, and of course wind conditions and everything else being slightly different. So now we see an uptick, and the uptick is that these balloons are being used to transport explosive devices. So it's no more just a little firebomb that will set light to the fields or set light to a barn or to a home or to some sort of another building or infrastructure on the Israeli side of the border. Now, these balloons are carrying explosive devices, and we see, for example, yesterday that roads had to be closed off and a whole team of sappers had to be sent in order to detonate explosive devices that had landed on the Israeli side of the border via these balloons. And they have done some damage. And of course, they are extremely, extremely dangerous and extremely threatening. So once again, we're seeing a super cheap, unsophisticated method of really terrorizing Israel, just simply by tying explosive devices to a whole lot of balloons, floating them over the border. It's all very, very unsophisticated and unspecific. It's just wherever this device may land, let it explode. I mean, it's not really directed in any direction other than just kind of across the border. And there have been some stories, some suggestions that the next stage of this particular uptick in events is that tear gas will be attached to the balloons. There has been a threat that tear gas canisters will be attached and these balloons will be floated across with tear gas. So Again, the IDF is having to be very, very smart about counteracting what is the most unsophisticated weapon one could almost imagine. You know, here we've got all this high-tech stuff against ballistic missiles that we could intercept outside of the Earth's atmosphere, and having to deal with balloons which are being floated across the border with explosive devices attached. Very, very dangerous, super cheap, therefore very, very accessible to those people in Gaza who are trying to make a point. So once again, you know, as I say, we're having to try to respond to what is really the most basic of basic weapons, but which can be extremely dangerous and extremely effective if they're not allowed, if they're allowed to continue in this way.
Yeah, absolutely. Good news, Israeli unemployment sunk to a record low level in December. What is the current state of the Israeli economy?
Well, the Israeli economy is just growing at an unbelievable rate. And whenever you look at all of the measures that are associated with a general economy, then Israel seems to be really falling into all the best measures in terms of the main things, you know, the main things that we would look at in an economy. The unemployment rate fell from 3.9% in November down to 3.4% in December. So, you know, in economic terms, we would almost call that a situation of full employment. In other words, everybody who wants to work, almost everybody who would like to work, actually has the opportunity to work. And the statistics show that the unemployment rate is measured amongst people who are 15 years and older, because 15 is the legal age at which people are allowed to work in Israel. And in fact, many 15-year-olds do have jobs on the side while going to school, while studying, before the army, after the army. It's not unusual for kids of that age to have jobs. But it says here that the unemployment rate amongst those who are 15 or older fell down to 3.4%. The previous record was in October, when it was also 3.4%, but that was subsequently revised upwards a little to 3.5%. So 3.4% is actually really the record unemployment that Israel has ever managed to experience. Having said that, of course, we have to be cautious about celebrating too much, because the unfortunate part is that unfortunately still too many people earn too little. So even though people are working, and most people are working, as we can see from these statistics, unfortunately, not all of them are earning enough to survive and to see the month through. So the average salary, of course, is a very, very big issue. The minimum wage has been increased in recent years, but unfortunately, the cost of living is still so high that people are somehow still struggling to get through the month and to survive. And then many of those people that we talk about who are employed, actually employed in more than one job in order to make ends meet. So one of the things that's really driving at this cost of living is, of course, the strength of the shekel. And in spite of the Bank of Israel's attempts to try to buy foreign currencies in very, very large quantities in order to somehow drive down the exchange rate of the shekel, it hasn't really been successful. And we're still seeing the shekel at very, very strong, very strong currency and very, very high rates relative to the other major currencies, the euro, the pound, the US dollar, and other major currencies around the world. And of course, this makes imported goods very expensive. It also means that it doesn't make imported goods very expensive, but it makes exports very expensive, which means that goods and services that are being sold to foreign countries are much, much more expensive than they were before. And of course, for tourists coming to Israel, they find it to be very expensive to be here. Howard, you've obviously been a person who's experienced that personally. You just see the prices relative to what you're able to bring from abroad. Just so high, and people in Israel also feeling the same thing. The other thing that is interesting is that we have very, very low inflation at the moment and very low interest rates. The official interest rate is 0.25%. 0.25% is the current official interest rate, which sounds almost indescribable. It sounds like something that you couldn't believe, but that is the current state. So it seems as though the economy in general is in a very, very healthy situation with this low unemployment. But behind the scenes, when you delve a little bit deeper into the numbers, you're still finding that people are really struggling economically. Having said that, you know, the GDP, the growth in Israel, economic growth has been massive in recent years. People are earning more than they used to before. Unfortunately, still not quite enough in order for everybody to see the month through comfortably. A lot of people surviving below the poverty line. This is a very sad and a very big issue in Israel, the number of people who are still having to live below the poverty line. And it's a major issue that the new government, when eventually we get one, will have to address. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that really springs us into this whole election thing, because just in the last minute that we have, all I wanted to say was that we have another election in a month and really nobody's talking about it. Nothing.
That's so interesting. So, well, I know we fatigued, but we, you know, we're not voting here. So the question is, what is going to happen at the polls? Are people actually going to vote?
It's a good question. And I think that, you know, these, international developments that we see with the release of the Trump peace plan and with Netanyahu off to meet with the president of Sudan and other things like that is the attempts by the prime minister to try to keep these things on the agenda without talking about the election. He's actually electioneering in his own way. But nobody's really talking about the election right now. It's, I think, 28 days until we go to the polls, and there's hardly posters, hardly discussion, hardly news items. We're just not talking about it.
Fascinating. Really, really interesting. But I guess not surprising. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll chat to you tomorrow morning at 7:45. It is 8:01. Apologies. Your news is slightly late.